This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 336, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you.
One, two, one, woo! Young boy done me bad, went and did you wrong. Young boy done me bad, I went and did you wrong. And I got high, Lord, I got high. Now I got a bone to pick with you, and I'm sure you know it's true.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 336. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Howdy.
And because Ron is off, sitting in this week is Ryan Hopf from MyFanboy.com.
Hello.
And like I said, he's from MyFanboy. We're all from MyFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website. We talk about it on the podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, all kinds of fun comic book related things. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning. It's this review show. There'll be spoilers. If you haven't read the books yet, pause and come back. It cuts down on complaining. And really, that's at this point in my life, that's all I want.
Just be quiet.
So everyone be quiet. I want to take a nap.
Daddy's had a long night. Shh, give me a drink. Shh.
This week, unlike last week where they dumped the truck of books on us, this week was a light week and Josh had to pick.
It was a wee bit sparse. Luckily, after I got through my books, I can't say I expected this, but I looked at them and I thought, you know what? Cobra number 13 from IDW, that was the best thing that I read this week.
You loved this book.
I really did. And
in general, you love it in general.
Yeah, I do. It's got a great feel to it, and it's been consistent all along. There's this quiet tension, and it doesn't – like there are other G.I. Joe books, and I'll read them from time to time, and they're good. They're fine for what they are, but they're kind of what you expect. And they – you know, some will be a good G.I. Joe book, and some will be like a fun G.I. Joe book, and some will be dumb. But Cobra is – take – you know, we've said this. It's a little hard to come up with things that we haven't said about it, but – take the G.I. Joe out of it, and it's still a really good book. It's basically a spy game kind of thing. There's the good guys and there's the bad guys, but everyone is very gray. Everybody's switching sides. Everybody's holding their cards close to their vest.
Like real spies.
Yeah, yeah, and you just don't really know what's going to happen. And, you know, this is all laid over with the G.I. Joe versus Cobra, all that whole thing. And...
The endless battle for...
Yeah, as you know, if you watch the cartoon or you read the comic books or whatever, you know, nothing really changes. They shoot at each other. Well, at one time, they buried a bunch of Joes in a pit, but...
Yeah, they did.
That's great, by the way.
Oh, God, I could still see that page in my head. The something Viper, I forgot he had a special name, but the something Viper, a giant machine gun, and just mowed down, like, quick kick and dock and... All these people,
well,
my childhood dying before my very eyes.
I really should have known better than to come on a show when G.I. Joe was pick of the week. We're going to hit the hour mark and you guys are still going to be talking about the cartoon.
And then Doc shows up in the kids' window. I mean, he had it coming, to be honest. But regardless of all that, the book is far better than it has any right to be while being a licensed property. It defies all of that logic. And I know that for some, they read the first series and maybe read the second series, and a lot of people dropped off in the Cobra Civil War where they sort of try to integrate it with the other books. And I get that. Yeah, I get that. But for me, it's always been pretty good. The last issue, number 12, was a huge sort of button on the whole Chuckles story. That's a ridiculous sentence. And then this one is sort of starting up again. This is a really good jumping on point, actually, if you haven't read it. Number 13, where they've had everything's kind of been wrecked. All Cobra fell apart because there was a civil war in there, and they're all trying to be the new Cobra commander. And then, you know, they infiltrated the pit and it got destroyed. The pit is G.I. Joe's home base. Even right now, it sounds ridiculous saying it out loud in a serious way as an adult male. I don't want to, but the fact is, it's just a damn good book. And so what we have here is that the Joes, if they've sort of fractioned a little bit, and so some of them are in one place and some are another. One of the cells, it's like a little cell structure, is located in Las Vegas in a casino. That's their new base, which they thought, yeah, which and the big surprise.
They get bored.
Yeah.
There's lots to do.
Well, no, there were all sorts of real reasons. There was, you know, nobody thinks twice about blocked off restricted areas in a casino. Like, they're everywhere. There's helicopters arriving and going away from the roof. There's, you know, dudes in suits and sunglasses. There's all sorts of stuff going on that the public doesn't really pay attention to and makes good cover for that. There's the question of if civilians are at risk, but I guess they weren't worried about that. The big reveal here is who bankrolled the casino, and I don't want to wreck that, but it's a really good moment. And then the reaction of this one character, I think it's Chameleon, and she was a Cobra agent from the very first series, and then she got turned to the Joes, and sort of the middle part of her story was that they didn't know if they could trust her, but she was working for them, and they had her under sort of lock and key, and then she helped save some Joe lives, and now she's fully against Cobra. It's playing with her emotions. She was involved with Chuckles in early on, and she was used as an asset, and it was a big deal. There's a segment for the first third of it is this segment where there's this this female ninja character, and she's not Jinx. She might as well be. Her name is Ronin, and she's been trying to hide and be peaceful, and she's tracked down by this group of Cobra Vipers, and there's several pages with no dialogue where she's just fighting them and killing them. It's a really wonderful bit of comic book storytelling. The way that the pages are used are sort of, it's very quiet. It almost is like if you were watching the scene, it would be under very, if it was a movie, it'd be, you know, very sort of light, kind of quiet music and everything moving sort of slow motion. It was a really wonderful sequence. And the thing that I think makes this book really good, Mike Costa, the writer, he does a fine job. He's got the characters, he's got the tone. He never puts too much. Although I notice when there is a lot of exposition, it just doesn't feel that way for whatever reason. But Antonio Fuso, the artist, is really very, very, very good. You know, and he's a guy that no one talks about. Maybe because he's just...
part of the problem with dropping off the book was he went away for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that really affected the book negatively. And people will talk about him because he's doing an IDW G.I. Joe book.
Right. No, it all makes sense. And it's true. When he does it, it's really special. And that this was just more of that. It was just a great sequence, couple of sequences in this. And I think it's a good jumping on point. Not that there's nothing in it that doesn't refer to the past, but like if you read this and you go out and pick it up, and I really do hope some of you do, if you go, I like this, then you can easily go back and get the stuff that comes before it and fill in, and you'll have a really good time. But Fuso, man, he's just an underrated guy. He reminds me a lot of Jock, actually. It took me a little while to figure out what that was, but he's definitely got a sort of very different style than a lot of people out there. It's not over-rendered. It's great storytelling and sort of sparse, really nice sparseness, but also just a little bit of, it's just a little loose. You know, not everything is perfectly formed, but it all works very well. I just loved this issue.
I think I went through G.I. Joe Burnout when they did the relaunch with the Cobra Civil War and all the books were connected, and I think when Fuso dropped out and the Cobra story got dragged into the whole thing, and I just kind of walked away. I have this issue. I have the last one. I just haven't read either one because every time I sit down to do it, I get distracted. I don't know that I feel the pull to read it.
Sure.
I probably will once I actually do, but for now, I just sort of feel Joed out. But I will eventually.
Well, 12 and 13 are going to give you that feeling. Yeah. That you used to have with it. And I think for me, the key has been, I don't read any of those other books anymore. Like I was reading Origins, I think for a while, but then when that one went away, that was it. I tried a couple of them, but it wasn't the same. But this one, you know, just like before, you don't need to read the other ones. And there wasn't much Serpentor, which I think helped.
Yeah, I didn't love that storyline.
That was and there's a you're gonna appreciate the reveal at the end.
Okay.
The very last page.
I'll read them this weekend. So this week also saw the end of one of our favorite books, Irredeemable 37, from Boom Studios, Mark Waid and Diego Barreto, I think, drew it. It's too bad that Peter Krause couldn't come back to do the final issue. Interesting ending.
I don't know how I feel about this, and I consider that to be a generally good thing.
I mean, I really liked All-Star Superman number 10.
Yeah. Ryan, did you read this whole series?
I did. I picked it up based on your guys' repeated recommendations, and I've been on issues for a while. But for some reason, it didn't dawn on me that this was the final issue. And so when I looked at the front cover and it said, final issue, I was like, wait, what? I wasn't quite ready for it mentally. So I went into reading it with a bit of shell shock. But yeah, it happened.
I got to say that recently this series has wandered for me a little bit. It got very far into pseudo comic book science, comic book pseudoscience, where it was just all these, you know, big physics concepts and super intelligent beings battling each other, and got to be very metaphysical as opposed to action or character oriented, really. It's a lot of really smart people outsmarting really smart people.
I didn't love that part as much about the series.
Yeah.
What I liked about the final issue, in this issue, and I forget the guy's name, it was Cubit.
Yeah.
James
Syme, that's who it is,
yeah,
right?
He has a plan to defeat Plutonian, and he puts into place, and he makes Plutonian fly around the world. Otherwise, he's going to die because he's got this bullet in his heart that will actually kill him. And so he basically ends up saving the world from the radiation and poisoning that had been in place, and he ends up dying himself. And we had found out that Plutonian was kind of like a concept come to life. That part kind of lost me, the explanation of what he actually was. But I like the idea of turning the whole story on its head, in that originally this was a twisted take on Superman. And what happens in this issue is that since Plutonian is more of an idea that was brought to form by a sort of mentally disturbed woman, the idea is once again put out into the universe and ends up itself creating Superman through Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. I kind of like that as a nice button on the whole series.
Our version of Superman.
It ends up in Cleveland in 1938, and Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Siegel suddenly has the idea of a Superman, and he runs to Joe Shuster's house, and he starts drawing the Superman that we recognize from that.
Right, which it didn't say it was 1938 in Cleveland, but the kid runs into the house and the woman says, "Oh, you have vault." And I'm like, whoa, hey, do people still, is that, people still talk like that?
They
and,
do.
Yeah. I liked that it took that concept of this is a Superman inspiration and became the inspiration of Superman. I like the kind of Mobius strip of that.
It was very Mark Waid. The dude is the no one loves Superman like Mark Waid does, and like it fit. I wasn't sure if I liked it. I know it wasn't that I didn't like it. I think it felt a lot like watching the end of The Sopranos, where I was just like, huh. And you think about it, whether you want to like it or not. And you know, it all makes sense. It fits. I think I liked it. Yeah, I'm going to go with yes.
It was a kind of redemption in a way, right? Because that wasn't what Cubit was saying. Was he was saying, like, maybe when I do this and spread you back out across the multiverse, you'll finally do good instead of being awful.
So in that sense, the Irredeemable does good. He brings the world Superman, and Superman as an inspiration and all that stuff. So I like that part of it. I'd be interested to read the whole thing in a row, because honestly, it's not like that. I feel like Irredeemable's been around forever, but it's only 37 issues. You know, I think you could sit down and read them all through and see if some kind of story holds together through that whole period of time. It's like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a lot, but it doesn't feel like it.
It's three fat trades.
Yeah. This week also brought the return of Batman Incorporated number one. Grant Morrison is back with his Batman story. My favorite part of this issue was the yoga-esque gymnastics people have gone through trying to figure out where the story fits into the continuity, because the Batman Leviathan Strikes one-shot, which this continues from, very clearly states on the cover on the title page this takes place before Flashpoint and the New 52, and yet in this issue he references things that have happened in the Batman and Robin book and when Robin killed Nobody, but he's still wearing his old costume. And it doesn't really seem to fit into the New 52. It's just fun to watch people try to fit it in because they can't enjoy it without knowing where it goes. I just enjoy the crap out of it because it's Grant Morrison returning to Batman. And really no one writes Damian like Grant Morrison does.
Yeah, and you were talking about this on the website, that Damian has been sort of a non-factor since the relaunch of DC because Pete Tomasi writes him differently than Morrison had. It just feels like a different character. And as soon as I read this, I was like, oh, that's, there's Damien. There's the, there's the attitude we want. That's the, it's right. For whatever reason, it feels really right. I, you know, I did the same thing. I figured it didn't fit in anywhere. I just sort of read it as its own thing. And it works very well for me. I didn't know about the killing thing, but I sorted it out, you know.
If you put Morrison's story in its own little bubble anyway, it's probably works the best for anything he writes. But
yeah.
I also was really impressed by Burnham, who we've always liked, but I think is getting better and better. And in this issue, he's really, you know, making a name for himself. There's a couple of amazing sequences. One of them was the panel of the week where Robin fights in a circle. That's very Quietly-esque. It's just a wonderful... I was thinking, how different would things have been if, after Quietly left Batman and Robin, instead of going through that rotating cast of artists, Burnham had just done them all? I think you would have had a book that was been much more lauded than it was, because I think it dropped off the map after Quietly left. I think
even all those people weren't necessarily bad.
No, but I think the rotating cast of artists hurt that book.
Yeah, it hurt the consistency of it, I think. But you know, you're like, for me, the story of this book was really Burnham's work, which was even, you know, it was even better than the last time we saw it. I feel like he's, you know,
don't cry,
got this down.
I know it's very exciting, but
I just keep waiting for Leviathan and the Court of Owls to get in a turf war, because both of them are being written like they've got the final say of what goes on in Gotham.
It should be noted, I don't really remember what Leviathan was or what happened in that book.
Apparently, it's a really big owl.
Yeah, I didn't really care. Sense. You know,
the thing is, as a new reader, someone jumping on, you don't necessarily need to know any of that stuff. It's explained that you know, Leviathan is a bad organization.
I did actually have a continuity moment that I was curious about. Is the Batwing in this the same one? Has that series been canceled? Does that still exist?
No, that still exists. Still goes on. He's slightly different. I think he's supposed to be dead here. And
that
part confused me too.
And then there's the old versions of some of the outsiders. So it really is in its own Grant Morrison continuity bubble, which is fine, because you really don't need to read it. It's on its own, so you don't need to read anything else.
And Grant Morrison really likes putting bad guys in creepy animal masks.
Because it's creepy.
That was a great sequence. There's blood everywhere.
I'm just glad somebody finally brought up the fact that Gotham means home to goats. That's been bugging me for a while.
Yeah, the fight in the meat packing, or I guess whatever you want to call it, the animal processing center with the animal blood everywhere and the carcasses, it was pretty disturbing.
Yeah, it was good.
But it ends with the bat cow gag, so that made it all worth it.
It worked.
Just wonderful. It made me remember how much I miss Morrison writing Batman.
Yeah.
And again, Batman's been great under Snyder and other people, but it's a different kind of Batman story. Mm-hmm. The next book, Ryan, I'm really interested about, because I thought about picking it up originally, but I didn't end up doing that.
So it's Hulk Smashes the Avengers. And I originally had this as Hulk versus the Avengers because, you know, when I think Marvel books with their heroes fighting, I just go straight to verses. But it's actually Hulk Smash the Avengers. This is number 4. It came out. It's a story by Jim McCann, art by Carlos Padilla and Jaime Mendoza, depending on how that should be pronounced. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's it's a series of one-shots, essentially. This is 4 or 5, where they are going through Marvel history and recounting the times where Hulk has fought the Avengers. And it is that simple. So the first one was early in the formation of the Avengers, and they try to mimic the art style and the writing style. And this one was our 90s West Coast Avengers versus Mr. Fix-It in Vegas.
That's good time.
Which, I never read West Coast Avengers. I never read any of the Fix-It Hulk. I know about them through just being a comics guy, and I was able to pick this up and really enjoy it. Jim McCann, as always, does a good banter between Hawkeye and Mockingbird. And it was always fun to see an old Iron Man costume in use. And yeah, it was just...
Is it the red and silver one?
It was the red
and silver. I love that costume. That was my first.
You might need to pick this up, John.
Yeah.
It really is Mr. Fix-It as strongest there is.
I've got full blinders on for anything versus or smashing, or they'd really have to bring that up to me. But that does sound like
you
a good time.
You also don't love the Hulk, but...
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know why I picked this book up in the first place. For some reason, just like the Hulk smash the event, the title caught me enough that I picked up the first issue. And it was kind of throwbacky and kind of fun, and I dug it, so I've stuck with it. And each issue has been a little bit different, but they've all brought something interesting and fun to the table, and just good comic fun.
I wish Lee Weeks had drawn it. If he had drawn it, I definitely would have got it. He does the covers for all the issues. He's fantastic. He doesn't do much interior work anymore. If he had drawn it, I would have definitely got it. This sounds like it's in the vein of those old... Remember those old Avengers miniseries, Josh? The Joe Casey ones? That sounds like it's in that kind of
thing. Yeah, I think it is very much in line with those.
You get to play around with it a little bit. So this was the first week for Jeff Lemire on Justice League Dark. Number nine. And I would like to say that right away, I'm really impressed by the art of Mikkel Janin. I think it's a very good looking book. That's all that I have to say about it. No, it's not that bad. But I will say that this suffers the non-English person writing John Constantine, and it does.
He's Canadian, so technically he's a subject of the crown.
It does matter. It didn't sound like him. It didn't sound like him the whole way through, and I get that he's in the DCU proper now. I kind of don't care because it's just not the same thing. Like I'm like John isn't doing any of this. He's not doing any of this. I've been reading that character for 10 years, and this
That's
isn't
a
happening.
Character.
No, I know that exactly, and so I can totally be fine with saying this isn't my thing. And so when they cancel the Vertigo book in my line, then he won't be around for me anymore.
I enjoyed this. I like the fact that it's an offbeat Justice League and there's all these different characters who really do fit more in the Vertigo world and DCU world acting as superheroes or having to act as superheroes. I like their dynamic. I like the fact that none of them really get along. I know that's a cliche for us teen books, but in this sense, they just don't get along. Mm-hmm. They're very different kind of people. I like that, you know, there's a new team. They brought in the vampire from My Vampire, and they brought in this other character whose name I don't remember, Black Orchid, and they got rid of Madame Xanadu and a couple other people. And I like the dynamic. I love the art's fantastic. I've been liking this book. I'm not loving it, but liking it the whole way through. Mm-hmm. But I think this is probably a better mix than it was before.
Yeah, his facial expressions are really very good.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. It just didn't feel right to me. But
well, it's not going to be.
I know.
It's like reading, you know, Batman in one book and reading a Johnny DC Batman book. It's not going to be the same character.
He's the Johnny DC John Constantine. He still smokes.
I would like to actually see that book, an actual Johnny DC Constantine.
I would love to write that book. Has he ever shown up in Tiny Titans?
I would doubt.
God, that would be amazing. And like he'd have to have like a
candy
lollipop
cigarettes.
Or something. No, you can't have candy cigarettes. It's just.
Yeah.
They still sell them in Tennessee.
There's a store by me that sells candy cigarettes, and I'm just like, I feel like this is very irresponsible.
I had them as a kid. I had a photo of my brother with, you know, hanging out in the street corner with chocolate cigarettes in our mouths, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Go parents. They were good though. I remember. I never actually smoked, so I guess it wasn't a big problem in the end. But.
No, mine were like a sort of a powdery, chalky kind of candy cigarette.
So like the first puff you took, if you blew out, you could actually get a little cloud of dust smoke.
Then there was the kind with really rancid, awful bubble gum in them.
Yeah,
the puff one, that's fucked up.
They probably still spell Big League Chew as well, which is basically just training tobacco.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Now that you mention that, I realize that. As a kid, I, of course...
Really?
I don't know anything about tobacco. I grew up in New York City. I played Little League. I had Big League Chew, you know? I didn't know it was tobacco.
You know what's funny is that...
Now I feel awful.
That's only occurred to me just now. I thought Big League Chew was the coolest shit in the world.
Yes.
And I remember like being like, what happened to that? Where it's not around anymore. Why?
Because everybody graduated to tobacco. Because
it's chewing tobacco. Oh. That's terrible.
It's terrible. Yeah. Chewing tobacco.
I remember being in high school... And people started to do take chewing tobacco, and I was like, "Why would you do that? That seems horrible." They carry their little bottle around with the spittle in it.
Ugh, yeah.
Did that get all started with a gum?
Yeah, it might have.
All right, we've gotten off topic.
Did you guys have Johnny Smacks, the bubblegum heroin? I was like, no, just us.
Yeah.
All right.
See, New York City in the '80s, man.
On that note, if you're a creator or a publisher. You're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many eyes as possible, as easily as possible. Graphically is the best solution to do that. You can upload your books, your comics, your children's books, your sketchbooks, your photography books, just about anything graphic-based. And just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting into Amazon's Kindle store, Barnes & Noble's Nook store, Kobo, and of course Apple's iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app just made for reading comics. You can send your readers to the digital bookstores where people actually go in to buy books. And with 29% of all adults now owning tablets and e-reader devices and sales in 2011 increasing over 300%, from the year before to over 3 million ebooks sold, that's a lot of potential customers. You can find a full list of pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more.
There we are.
Now, if you want to talk fun times this week, Batman The Dark Knight number 9 features the cover with Tim Drake fighting a Talon, one of the soldiers of the Owls. And the solicitation has mentioned Tim Drake's return to Gotham City. He's not only on only one page, he's not only in only one panel, he doesn't even have a line of dialogue. It's not even him fighting a Talon. He's just sort of standing in the background next to Nightwing and Robin. So,
Tim Drake's really become the T-Dog of the Batman universe.
Well, the whole discussion about Damian that we mentioned earlier came about because I said Tim Drake's completely unnecessary to DCU right now.
And you say this as a person who really, really likes this character.
I do, but he is. Mm-hmm. It's just that's the fact. The way it is right now, he's not Robin. He's not Nightwing. He doesn't really have a place. He's in Teen Titans, but the problem is they had a good character in Damian who's now a boring character. Now they've got Tim Drake who's a non-entity, and so there's really some house cleaning needs to be done.
Yeah,
maybe an event.
Maybe a death. Maybe a gay death event. They could have a gay death event.
They get a lot of press about that.
Maybe the gay character should be Tim Drake, although that doesn't seem to fit with his past. I know I talk about this a lot. The Unwritten, which went on its sort of every other week 0.5 thing this summer, which should have been terrible, but was actually very good, which lets it get away with doing 0.5 numbering, came out with issue number 37, which is sort of the next story. And what they've done is shoot forward in time and sort of realign all the pieces on the board where Tommy has become this sort of pseudo-religious figure and cults have sprung up. And because of these cults, people have gone missing. And it's a story about a cop who's gone undercover to try to find them in a character who's sort of their high priest who looks a lot like Alan Moore. And it takes place in Australia, this story. And it was again, a lot of fun. It's a really good book. It is packed full of content. You know, he'll have pages that have, like, clippings from blog posts and different websites and stuff like that.
He really puts a lot of work, yeah. Carrie. A lot of work into this book.
Yeah, and it's so consistently, you know, good-looking and thoughtful. And the vampire guy wrote a book about everything that they went through, and now he's sort of semi-famous, and it's like that thing with Daredevil, you know, where everybody kind of knows he's a vampire, but they're not sure, and they just, like, it's neat. They just move the world forward, and we're in a new place, and we didn't even see Tommy in this issue. Great next step. I guess it could go on a little while longer.
Power 25 came out this week, and this was the first issue where I was doing more head-scratching than not.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. So I was a little behind on Prophet, so I caught up this week, and I wasn't expecting to get to an ending with Prophet 23 of a storyline, because I kind of just expected this entire book to meander for a while longer. And so Prophet 24 kicked off a new storyline, and Prophet 25 is the next arc in that story, and it definitely, yeah, it was not what I was expecting.
The best thing that Prophet had been up to this point, John Prophet's exploration of this alien world. And then, as Ryan mentioned, at the end of that storyline, he met up with a bunch of other prophets, men who look just like him. And then this issue, that we meet some other ones, we follow them around, some weird stuff happens, and then at the end, the prophet's alive, and he puts on the helmet that looks a lot like the old prophet from the old image days. So it's the first sort of callback to the original prophet story.
Which, not having read any of that, I didn't get at all. I was just...
I haven't read anywhere. I just know the imagery from prophets. I know I looked at that. He had the very specific helmet that goes down over the sides of his face, and he puts it on at the end.
This book really reminds me of The World Below by Paul Chadwick. It's like a six-issue series that came out. I think Dark Horse republished a collection of it. But it has that same kind of, like, dark, murky, underground exploratory feel, and there are these big looming giants called the Nephilim, which there's a lot of religious imagery and nomenclature going around in these books, which I'm curious to see if that ever becomes anything, but it is curious. And
the art was interesting. It wasn't as good as the last two artists, was Farrell Dalrymple and Simon Roy. This time it's Giannis, Emilio Giannis. It was good, very different, very European, but the storyline is a bit obtuse, and that's saying something for this book, which has been obtuse has been a good thing about it. This was, like, super obtuse, but it was still fun, just not as good as the last couple.
So do you guys remember about a year ago, Chew number 27 came out?
This has been giving me an anxiety attack all week.
Yeah.
Because I keep reading 26 and thinking I'm somehow off.
Nah, well, it's not your fault. 26 came out. So 27 came out last year, and then, like, right after issue number 18, I think. Something like that. And then so now we've gotten up to present. And so all of the things that were kind of... And 27 was a pick of the week, it should be noted. All of the things that were confusing about that are now going to start to get explained with Tony Chu's sister, who works at NASA, which is not the same NASA, just like, you know, the FDA is not the same FDA.
Oh, it's the same.
Well, sure.
you just don't know. You don't know what really goes on at NASA.
Those guys are armed? I don't think they can afford guns at this point.
They've arrested people for stealing space rocks before.
Cool. You have to give them credit for massive coordination and planning a really long ways away. And over coming up with characters who are completely different than anything I've ever read and very interesting. You know, I can't think of her name, but the sister. Her name's Tony, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's why I can't think of it. I was like, that's not right. It's, you know, and she's just completely, she has to bite people to tell what she thinks of them. You know, it's fun. It's like it's always been, but I was impressed by the sort of forethought to make this work.
It's interesting. They're going to re-release 27 next time with
really
with new yeah. pages and new stuff to get you to buy the issue twice. I don't know if I'm going to, but
no.
But
I'll flip through it. I'm really curious. Because yeah. I feel like at this point I want to go back. Here's the thing. When they do the trades, are they going to do issue 27 when it came out? Or
oh, we talked to him about this a really long time ago, like a year and a half ago. And I think not. I think that when you read the trades, you're going to read them in order like anybody else. This is just yeah. a thing for the issue readers, if I recall correctly.
Makes most sense, yeah.
Yeah, that's. I wouldn't. I don't. I want people to know that when the next when 27 came out, that they probably already bought it, even though there will be new things in it. But you know,
what can you do?
Those beware.
Books we read this week. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can make your pull list, rate and review your books, and you can make your own pick of the week. We're gonna do some user reviews, but first we're gonna go down the top five picks of the week from the iFanboy community. Number five was the Amazing Spider-Man 686 with 2.2% of the votes. Number four was Chew 26 with 2.9% of the votes. Number three was Mind MGMT, number one, with 6.5% of the votes. Number two was Justice League Dark, number nine, at 23.5% of the votes. And number one was Batman Incorporated, number one, with 53.3% of the votes.
It should be noted that my pick of the week, 0.7.
0.7. Well, it doesn't matter because ultimately you're the only one that matters.
No, it's totally true. I'm cool with it. First user review up is Tim Drums talking about Mind Management. Management. I want to say management.
It's a Web 2.0 website.
Yeah, it is. Comic book. Mind Management, number one from Dark Horse by Matt Kent, gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage was a pretty healthy 6.5%, like Connor just said. And he says, layers within layers. Mysterious amnesia, secret conspiracies, and the feeling that maybe this is all in the mind. Without a doubt, this book deserves and needs multiple readings, and as there's really too much going on and just to skim through. The best comic I've read in a long time in terms of new ground broken. Highly, highly recommended. I'm not a fan of Kent's artwork. I think with a different or better artist, this would be a 5-star book. And that was his whole review.
Did you read this?
I tried.
I read it.
I gotta say, I wanted to try. It didn't grab me. And I'm off and on about Kent. I really liked Super Spy a lot, but even that took me a really long time to get into. And I think that his art is a bit of an acquired taste. Is, you know, if you're looking at it in terms of what you're looking at traditional comic book art that you're used to seeing all the time, there's a lot of talking heads and explaining in this. There's a lot to read, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's a book, but I had a hard time getting into it. And
this might have been my pick of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. I mean, this is like Matt Kent doing Inception, as far as I'm concerned. I liked the asides. I liked the little weird like Archduke Ferdinand bit, and
I liked that. I wanted more of that.
I'm not surprised, but I just I'm totally on board for this. It looked great. I am a pretty big Matt Kent fan. I like his more esoteric work. Like I really liked Revolver, the End of the World book he did, and this to me was up there with that in terms of quality, and I think his art is fantastic.
Yeah, I think I want to like him a lot more than I actually do. Like, he's just one of those things that like I'm like, well, people seem to like that a lot, and I read it, and I don't think it's bad. I just, for whatever reason, I don't connect with it.
Maybe that's the thing about you, Josh.
I really liked Super Spy, though. I thought that was a ton of fun. It took me forever to read, though.
It's a dense book.
Yeah.
Very dense.
And these little vignettes, so it's not like it makes you push from one to the next. Like, oh, I finished that one. I'm good for now.
Dix reviewed Green Lantern, New Guardians, number 9, Being Adult.
You did that on purpose.
Story, I admit nothing. Story 4 out of 5, New Art 4 out of 5, and 0.2% of you made it your pick of the week. And Dix says, this issue features St. Walker and his fellow Blue Lanterns in their defense of their homeworld. And while this isn't quite as compelling a story as last month's, it's not bad for big, flashy lantern action. This is also an opportunity to dig more into the nature of the Blue Lantern Corps and St. Walker's place in it. Though not a deep story by any means, the art and scripting are both solid. The Blue Lanterns are as racially diverse as any corps, so there's more than a few neat aliens in there. It's kind of interesting, a ring powered by hope and the fragility that inevitably brings, more so, I would think, that fear or will or rage. I don't read this.
If you don't read it, then you know that no one else does. I thought it was very interesting that it seemed like a bunch of people actually liked it. Like, it's pretty good, and I think that for whatever reason, all of that in post-Blackest Night world, you know, people sort of ran away from it a little bit. Like, that'll do, but it's still going.
The people who read this book do generally give it good marks on iFanboy, so I think it's, for people who want that storyline, I think it's a good one.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. That's just me speculating.
You don't want that. You just want, you want Hal Jordan in the apartment looking at a bunch of bills going, what do I do?
That's right. Yeah. Is that so much to ask for?
I don't think it is. I think it's fine. That is all that we have for the user review segment. If you want to be part of all this, make sure that you make your pull list on Mondays or anytime thereafter, really, on ifanboy.com, and rate your books and make your pick of the week choice and do reviews on any of the ones that you feel you have something to say about. So let us move on to the emails. We've got a large crowd participation segment coming up.
We have our first email from Andy. He says, I got back into comics about 18 months ago after a decade-long hiatus filled by the Army, college, and grad school. Once I got back into the hobby, I became something of an evangelist amongst people I know. Literally no one else hooked into it in any meaningful way outside of a random graphic novel. My question is, why don't more people read comics? The medium has a visual nature and a small amount of reading required, and it is populated with characters most everyone knows. When I've gotten answers as to why people avoid comics, it is often because of A, expense, B, comics are for kids, C, panels are confusing. None of these are very satisfying answers to me, given the silly things people spend huge amounts of money on and lots of things that adults do that were once considered childish. The panels things blow my mind, as I had no idea how to respond to that. What are your thoughts?
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it?
If we had the answer, we could sell it to Marvel and DC.
First and foremost, Andy, it's Memorial Day this Monday, so thank you for your service in the Army. That was awesome. Good job.
And then going on to higher education, which Ryan also likes.
Grad school is, I feel your brother.
Yeah, if we could sell the secret of this to Marvel or DC, we could make upwards of $10,000 to $15,000.
I think it's like anything else. There are myriad reasons why people don't, and I think the three you listed are three reasons why, amongst others.
I've often had people ask me how they're supposed to read panels when I hand them a comic for the first time.
It's not a normal thing, and some people's brains have a problem processing that.
Is that really a thing? I've never heard that.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh,
it's been shown that some people have a problem figuring out how you read a comics page. It's one of the reasons why there's understanding comics, because some people don't understand how you put together pictures and words in that manner.
Scientists have to put together posters for conventions a lot, where we show our research if we're not giving a talk or whatever. And the number of times I've helped people with their poster design based on what I learned in understanding comics is myriad.
It is a problem. It's not a huge problem, but it is one problem. Expense is a big problem. You're not going to get many kids plopping down $4 for a comic. Comics aren't for kids is the stigma. There's a distinct distribution problem. They aren't in most places people live anymore. They used to be found everywhere, supermarkets, newsstands, the local drugstore. Now they're basically in comic stores and maybe one or two other places. There's lots and lots and lots of reasons why.
Well, it is one of those. To me, I think that the main thing is, it's funny because on one side, the comic side, we can recognize that it hasn't done a very good job keeping or attracting young readers, kids, whoever. There are certain ways that they try to do it, but by and large, if you see your standard comic book out there, it's not written for kids. Even just like an issue of Superman or whatever. Now, on the other side of it, the larger populace thinks that comic books are for kids. They literally see it the same way that, some people just see that something is animation and they think, oh, it's a cartoon, it's for children. And they don't give it another thought. Now, we have been, as an industry, as a hobby, battling that idea for 3 decades now, as they matured and almost to a fault where they went too far. There really is something about the medium that people just toss it aside, which to me, in my whole theory on comics has always been that it's just another way. It's not a theory. It's just another way to tell a story. It's no different than a novel or a TV show or whatever version. If you have a story, it's a way to tell that story. And the rest of the world gets it a little more, I think. But in America specifically, people just don't think of that as their form of entertainment. And if you do, then you tend to specialize in it. You tend to be, about comic books. It feels like there are not casual comic book readers, other than like a guy who is a roommate to somebody who is a serious comic book reader.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of entertainment choices.
Yeah.
When comics were super popular in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, there were a lot of other things to do. You had the radio, you had the cinema, you had
cigarettes.
Magazines and pulp.
Yeah, I was going to say, candy, pulp, cigarettes, and a stack of comics.
and Johnny Smack. So,
I feel good, Mom. Now I feel bad.
No, I feel very, very sad.
Just brings you back to normal.
So, it's tough when you've got, high-end video games. You hand a kid a video game or you hand him a comic, and you say, which one do you want to do? Most kids are going to choose the video game. And
do you want to read about Batman, or do you want to be Batman?
And it's tough. The era might be over, and I think people who read comics love them don't want to think about that, but You know, it could be that the time has come and gone for, you know, this kind of entertainment.
Well, fortunately, comic fans are notoriously adept at dealing with change. So that's right. Good. We'll be fine.
So it's tough. There's why don't people read them? There's so many reasons why.
I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this, but do you think that there's anything to the idea that people who read comics are so lately happy to label themselves with "I'm a geek" and this is the geek thing I do? Like, and I think that that's damaging because what it does is it puts comics in a subculture. It makes comics other than the mainstream. You know, people don't say they're a book geek. Some might, but most people just go.
People do.
Yeah, I know,
but then that also labels them as part of a subculture too.
Right, but the vast majority of people out there, you know, who read a book are just like, I like to read sometimes. You know, like they read books sometimes, and there's no reason that comics can't be that thing too. To my mind, there's a lot of, you know, reasons that it isn't, I guess, but it could be just a thing that people read, you know, adult contemporary literature or however you want to put it, but with illustrations, you know. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of sort of perception changes that would have to be made over a long period of time, and this era of big superhero movies hasn't done a damn thing for that.
Yeah,
I don't think
it's different.
Yeah,
people enjoy the characters, but that doesn't mean they're going to read the comics.
No, I literally met a guy sitting on a shuttle from the airport yesterday who I had a Superman, you know, Say No to Kryptonite shirt on, and he said, like, oh, I like your shirt. I go, thanks. And somebody mentioned, like, oh, yeah, Ryan really liked comics. And the guy literally said, yeah, I don't read comics, but I really like the movies. Did you like Avengers?
Mm-hmm.
Comic book movies was the subculture that he was excited to be a part of, not comics themselves.
Yeah, which is superhero movies, really.
It's not even a subculture. It's just culture.
Yeah, I don't think Road to Perdition was on his list. So.
No. No, I love that Harvey Pekar movie, man. Rocked.
Yeah.
So we could go on this forever.
There are lots of reasons.
Yeah.
There's not one silver bullet that's going to solve the problem.
We don't have a solution for you.
Alex writes and says, buying habits question. What's your thought process behind buying a collected edition of a book you've already paid for and read in a different format? Is it mostly a matter of thinking the book will be read better collected? Is it more a collector's mentality matter where the specific hardcover or another is such a seminal piece of genius that you must own it in all forms? For me, it's definitely a combination of both. I buy all monthly issues digitally, and I'll buy collected editions of things I was either waiting on or things that I already bought, but just had to have in a more grandiose format.
Now, I thought this was interesting because, Connor, you buy a lot of collected editions, often of things that you already own.
Well, it's also different now than it was about a year ago, in that I don't keep my single issues anymore. I give them away. So when I buy collected editions, it's usually A, something I've been reading only in trade, like Walking Dead or Invincible or DMZ or something like that, or Unwritten. That's just my way of reading the story because I only read it in trade. Or something I want to read again. For instance, I got the Batman hardcover, I got the Catwoman hardcover, I got things like from the New 52 because those are stories I want to read again and I don't have the issues anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the way I prefer to read comics. So for me, it's my way of consuming them. If I wasn't doing the show, I wouldn't buy single issues. I just read the trades. But since we do the show, I got to read the issues. But then after I'm done with them, I give them away. And then and I keep the collected editions.
What's it take for you to buy something that you – I mean, you bought stuff that you had collections of but then went and bought – you like the big fat
– Well, I have a softcover, hardcover, and absolute version of Dark Knight Returns. I have a softcover and an absolute of Watchmen. I've got a hardcover and absolute of Crisis. I mean, if it's a major book that means a lot, then I'll certainly buy it in multiple formats if their formats are interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ryan,
it's mostly just about reading, though.
Ryan, as a transient, perpetual student / smart person, do you like to burden yourselves with these things, or?
So most of the comics I bought, I used to be almost exclusively a trade waiter. I wouldn't read anything in issue, and I would just wait for everything. That was more in college when I had a good local comic shop that I liked that was getting new trades in every week. Since I've moved out of California, I haven't really established myself with a new comic shop, so I've switched over to buying almost all my single issues digitally, which means that if I'm up on a book digitally, I still won't get the trade when it comes out because I feel like I've read it. So at this point, my collected edition purchasing habits basically center around, does my girlfriend need to read it? Therefore, will she be mad if I don't get it? Which means I buy Walking Dead and Fables when those come out. And then pretty much every other collected edition goes on just my Amazon wish list for Christmas time. The one book where I've gone out of my way. So I have the absolute and the soft cover of New Frontier, but the only book where I've really gone out of my way to get the new hardcovers when they've come out is Sandman.
Hmm. I thought the absolute or the
No, not Sandman, Neil Gaiman. I said Sandman, I meant Starman.
Oh. Yeah, that's a really
good
example. That's actually a really good example, because the thing for me is I do it differently than in either of that. Once I read something in an issue, chances are I'm not going to A, read it again, or B, want to get the collection of it. Even on stuff that I liked, a bit. Like, for me to go buy the collection of something, like, it has to be a really big deal. And I've got trades that I didn't rebuy, but Starman is actually one of those, like, I bought all of those and I gave away all my trades to somebody at like an iFanboy event or something like that. And there's a handful, it's a smaller handful in Connors of stuff that I will sort of double dip on and revisit in that format. So for me, like it to get one of those things that I bought before, I have all the BPRD, those big deluxe editions that they've been releasing.
Ones? Yeah, I have those.
Because they're beautiful, and I want to get, I only have the first Hellboy one, but I'd love to get the rest of them. I just haven't got around to it. But other than that, there's not a whole lot. I bought all the Powers, deluxe hardcovers, even though I have the issues. But, say, take something like Preacher, for example. Like, I have all of the Preacher trades, and I will, Preacher's my favorite comic book story of all time. I don't feel the need to go buy the hardcovers for some reason. I can't.
There's got to be some sort of sentimental attachment to your old, better-worn trade paperbacks that you've read 100 times and will read again.
Yeah. I think it's that, for whatever reason, that's the way that you read that book, and that's what it feels like. So I don't feel the need to make it any different. I know when Starman came out, it was in different order. It had been a nicer, the Starman trades were odd. You couldn't tell which one was first. And
right, exactly.
Yeah, they were mess.
They were all messed up, and that the Hellboy stuff is a little the same way. And also the Hellboy stuff's bigger, it's reprinted in a larger format. But for the most part, I think, what did I buy? I bought Ed Brubaker's first 25 issues of Captain America. I bought that omnibus, But it's all.
I look at it as what am I going to want to read again, and B, what am I going to want to lend to people? Mm-hmm. And that's usually what I, in terms of rebuying stuff I already read single issues. Outside of the stuff I read only in trade, the stuff I mentioned earlier. If I'm rebuying a story I've read, I got the Batman hardcover, I'm going to reread that for sure.
Yeah. Have you slowed down, or you think you're buying it as much? Because you buy a lot of series.
I buy a lot of series. A lot of them just end, so I don't have anything to replace them with yet. I can see myself eventually a lot of these Image series going to trade on them.
See, I don't buy.
I just got the original Rising trade number one this week. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to read it because I like turning more in bigger chunks. Yeah.
I tend to not buy trades for ongoing things unless I don't know. I'm cool. I like buying issues, actually, oddly enough.
I just hate buying issues. Fury Agent, I read in trade, just ended. DMZ, just ended, I read in trade. Northlanders, I read in trade, just ended. I'm down to Walking Dead, Invincible, Unwritten, Sweet Tooth. I think those are the only ones I'm actually... Oh, Lock and Key.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
The only ones I'm reading for the first time in trade form.
Mm-hmm. I always feel like that's a big risk. It's $20. You don't know if it's going to be good.
That's anything.
But in issues, you can just buy two or three issues in a row and be like, I don't like this anymore.
I don't think that's going to happen with Scalped.
No, yeah. I don't. I don't either.
Connor, I say hang on to the end with that one. Scalped is one of the ones that I read in trade. So
I don't know. I'm kind of done with it.
That was what I was. You're kind of done with Scalped. You're over.
You're gonna drop off with two issues to go.
Yeah.
Just felt like it lost its top somehow.
I did that.
I stopped playing World of Warcraft when I was level 59.
Yeah. I dropped off for Lost like that. I think I just didn't watch the last episode. I was like, that's it. This is stupid.
If you have an email, you can use contact@ifanboy.com. We will read your email on the show if it's good, or we will answer it in our weekly letter column if it's good. And if it's not good, you will never hear from us again.
You won't even be able to download the show.
Our first voicemail is familiar.
Hi, John from Albuquerque again. I just was reading Flex Mentallo based upon your glowing review, and I loved it. And I noticed a joke that they use in it that you guys use a lot on the show. It's about newspapers writing articles using a headline, and I believe this is a direct quote from the book, Zap, Pow, Comics Aren't Just for Kids Anymore. And I'm pretty sure I've heard you guys use those exact words when making fun of mainstream, i.e. non-comics media, talking about comics. I just wonder if you got this joke from Grant Morrison, or is the joke something Grant Morrison got from somewhere else? But was there ever an actual newspaper title that said, Zap, Pow, Comics Aren't Just for Kids Anymore? Thanks.
I assume you've never seen an article on comic books, ever.
That exact headline's been written...
Exact. I would say that I do not have a bigger pet peeve about comic books and media than this. And I have several. No, I didn't. I saw that in there, which is interesting.
I get it from that, obviously, since Josh just read it
for
the first time last month. But he did that because it's exactly that headline's been written numerous times. Numerous times.
It's scary. how many times that unclever thing has made it past editors who apparently also never read anything else about comics. It comes up constantly. It's left over from 1966. Nothing makes me. It's like an overarching thing of whenever you see an article written about comic books, no matter how progressive the content of the story is, it always starts off with something like that, if not that exactly. I saw one this week. Like it will not die. You know, Grant Morrison was just hooked into that the same way we were. And it's, you know, he wrote that in 1996 or earlier. You know, and think how long ago that was. We're still dealing with it.
I just Googled Biff Bam Pow, comics aren't for kids anymore. I got numerous, just you can just scroll down the page.
Yeah.
Not the exact Pow Biff comics aren't for kids. I mean, there's variations of it, but it's the same thing. Just Google comics aren't for kids anymore and you'll get numerous headlines.
But don't, because it'll make you very, very sad.
Which is worse for comics, do you think? The conception that comics are for kids that won't die, or the sad nerd alone in the basement?
Which is worse? They're both bad.
They're both related.
I mean, they're both bad, but like, which one is...
Well, they're related in that the nerd in the basement is assumed to be a kid who didn't grow
right,
up.
Right, right. Yeah. Honestly, the guy in the basement is worse.
Yeah.
Because if people think they're for kids, at least they'll buy them for their kids, and that will create comic book readers. And they'll know or find out if they keep going that they can keep reading different kinds of comics, you know, as their age advances. But if they're just for sad, lonely nerd people, they have no shot, I guess. They're both bad.
Our next voicemail is talking about a subject we just talked about a little bit in the email section.
Hey guys, this is Dave calling from Washington, D.C. Getting excited about both the Spider-Man movie and the new Dark Knight movie, and I wanted to know which you think will be more awesome between the two, because I don't know, I'm just sort of equally excited about both of them, so maybe you guys have some sort of insight about which is going to be better. Let me know. Bye.
Which movie is going to be better? That's easy. Piranha 3D.
I thought it was the sequel. I thought it was Piranha 3 Double D.
Oh, that's right.
3D already came out. I saw it in the theater. It was spectacular.
You botched your own joke, Patrick.
I forgot about that. we have no insight into which will be better, but, you know, obviously it's going to be Batman. Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've seen the other Batman movies, I think you can pretty much know what you're in for.
Seems like a slam dunk.
That's not to say Spider-Man doesn't look good. I think it looks good, really good.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it, but, I mean.
If you're asking me what I'm most excited to see, Spielberg's Lincoln, but I don't see what that has to do with this.
Is that this year?
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be.
Is that the one where he hunts vampires?
No. No.
I get so sick of that question.
Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln. Good Lord. You know, I said this, I was probably the most excited for Avengers, and I wasn't even that excited about that until sort of right beforehand, and then I had fun with it. I feel a little like, God, I feel like I just walked out of The Dark Knight. That's how relentless that movie was.
Yeah, and it's like, of course Dark Knight has to have more anticipation because that's the final act of the story. Mm-hmm. Like, the Spider-Man one's a reboot, it'll be fun, but we all know the story of Spider-Man. We know what the Lizard's about, we know the arc between him and Gwen Stacy, and the movie will do it differently, but...
It'll be like, how much can they make this like the comics that everybody loves, but slightly differently than when they did it before 3 years ago?
Right, and so, but with Dark Knight Rises, we're legitimately getting something that we don't know what's going to happen, and that's way more exciting for me as a viewer. And I know they're not viewers, but
I agree.
Wow, nice one.
Whoa,
I agree. I think the big. I was talking to somebody about this before, and the thing is, you know, totally what you're going to get from the movie. You know the world you're in, and you know the characters for the most part, but you just don't know how the story's going to end, which is good and scary. I just see Lincoln does not have a release date yet.
I'll wait. I'm fine with that. Okay, I changed my answer to The Brave. I think that comes out this year.
2012. It doesn't say what date.
You're more excited for Brave than Dark Knight Rises?
The one thing about, like, I really enjoyed The Dark Knight and I appreciate it, but I've tried to watch it a couple times since then, and it requires an immense amount of concentration, and it's sort of just depressing. And I kind of don't want to feel like that again. If that makes any sense.
That's weird, because I think you can put it on the background. You don't have to concentrate on it if you know it.
Yeah, no, I know. I just like tonally, it's not really my type of movie. I like it. I think it's really good. I enjoyed it, but I don't necessarily feel like I need more, because in the same way, I feel like I've been there and done that a little bit. I know that it's a third chapter. I'm totally going to go see it, and it's fine, but am I really excited about it? No, not really. And I'm definitely like even more so as Spider-Man. I'm just like, oh, they're going to do that again. Like, it's not exciting me for whatever reason.
Yeah, see, I've considered just trying to sleep until July.
Yeah,
I just want to see something new. Like, that was when we went to see Avengers, that was like a new thing. I mean, it was a combination of things that had been done before, but it was a new thing, and that was really exciting to me about it. It was a thing we hadn't seen.
But that's what Chris Nolan's going to do with Rises, is it's going to be new in a way that you're not even expecting. This is his prestige act of the three-part magic trick that will be the Dark Knight trilogy.
And I want to watch the Prestige again.
There you go.
That's what I'm looking forward to. Prestige
David,
3.
David Bowie's going to show up in the middle of Dark Knight Rises mm-hmm. with some sort of Deus Ex Machina. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
If you have a question, you can call us 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. And Josh, tell us about some shows we got coming up.
Oh, man. Podcasts out your ass. That's what's happening here. On Mondays, there's the Don't Miss podcast. We tell you about a book that's going to be coming out that Wednesday that you don't want to miss. Paul will be talking to Curtis J. Wiebe of Grim Leaper. Wiebe also wrote a bunch of other stuff, Green Wake and Peter Panzerfaust. He's on a tear is what he is. You got to watch out for this guy. They're going to be talking about that new book, yet another series from Image that comes out every Wednesday. There's the Make Comics podcast, where myself and former editor and head of comics experience, Andy Schmidt, talk about issues as related to making comics and breaking into comics, from the business to the technical to the craft to all sorts of things. We pick something, talk about it for a little while, and generally feel like there's a whole lot left to say, but we try to give you a start on it. And then finally, there will be a spate of Talksplodes. Those are our interview podcasts coming up. This last week, you would have heard me talking to Tim Seeley, writer, artist of many, many things, creator of Hackslash, new writer on Witchblade. He's got a new series at Image coming out with Mike Norton Revival. And him and I talked for about an hour, and it was a really good conversation about a guy who's got one of the more unique careers in mainstream comics today. He's really got to build a niche for himself. Next week, roundtable conversation between myself and cartoonists Chris Schweitzer and Scott Chandler, who both do sort of all ages, cartoony looking historical graphic novels. Not necessarily all ages, but I talked with them for a while too, and that was another great conversation. And then the next week, I got another really cool one coming up, so hang around for those.
I do a podcast.
You do?
I do. Every week it comes out.
You have 8 seconds.
Okay. ScienceSortOf.com is the website where you can find my podcast. I do a podcast called Science Sort Of. It is a show that has discussions about things that are science, things that are sort of science, and things that wish they were science. We have a drink. We talk about science. Last week, we did an audio commentary to the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek. It was lots of fun and lots of bad science explained. I think you might enjoy it.
And you're not a hobbyist. You're an actual scientist.
It's my day job.
Right. That's pretty badass.
I mean, it's what I'm about.
Yeah.
It's on my
platform. Stop it.
Yeah, I don't think that you can't. You're not. You don't have the points for that.
You can check out ifanboy.com for Josh's Pick of the Week review, and soon you'll be able to read my Book of the Month review and all of our weekly comics discussion topics, articles. Ryan writes a weekly column. We've got all kinds of things going on at ifanboy.com, including ifanboy.com/about, where you can see the staff and you can see our social network links. And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy, and stay in touch on ifanboy.com, facebook.com/ifanboy. I see the F and I go into ifanboy.
It's fair.
That's what happens.
It's fair.
FA,
it should be
a FA for Facebook. I go to iFanboy.
It should be a big F.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You can email us at contact@iFanboy or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, whatever. I got to say, the grouping of emails and voicemails this week, very strong.
If you dig us, write a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your moms to podcasts and spread the iFanboy word. I told my mom today, I was like, Mom, I can't go do that thing this afternoon. I have to record a podcast. That's one way you can tell your mom.
She was like, what's a podcast?
Oh, she likes Science Sort Of. She's a fan.
That's what she tells you, sure.
Oh, yeah, I love that show you do.
I downloaded on my Zune.
We have 2 reviews on Zune.
Really?
Yeah.
People still have Zunes?
Apparently, you can still buy them.
Can you?
What does it cost?
Lots of money. They're way too much. They're like $400 for a Zune.
For a Zune?
It's something absurd like that.
I want something that can play MP3s that isn't compatible with anything. It looks like a garage door opener. What do you got for me? That's right. I just did a tech joke.
When I was a kid, you could buy a pack of Johnny Smacks for like 50 cents.
And he would just walk into the corner store and he'd be like, two, give me two.
Holy shit, Ryan is not wrong. $500 for a Zune.
Are they like on the collector's market?
No, on Amazon. On Amazon. 120 gigabyte Zune. $500.
Yeah.
Like new or like old new stock?
Not gilded in gold, not so, dipped in the blood of orphans.
Because I could see like
regular.
I could see like some stalwarts who hate iPods and are just like have put the Zune into like, you know how like records are now more expensive.
People that hate Apple such a passion that they'll use a Zune even though it sucks
and pay way more for it because it's what's better. It's got a the low end is a lot stronger.
The low end is $319.
Hmm.
So really, those two reviews that I have. Or it's like $1,000 worth of reviews.
Oh yeah, those are prime. Those are the people you want.
It's like West Wing audience reviews.
Yeah,
two of the most boring reviews I've ever read.
They're the kind
sought after demo.
They're the kind of people who buy Volvos and BMWs. That's what you want. Yeah. Not like our listeners. Not like the people listening to this.
Real American.
Bunch of. We got a bunch of guys driving their mom's old used car and watching G.I. Joe DVDs in the basement. You know, it's not demographic wise, they're not worth anything. I didn't just call all of you useless. Damn it.
Hey, on that note,
I'm Ryan.
I'm Josh, and I'm sorry. I was just kidding. Jeez, guys.
I miss Ron.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.